It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This morning on Morning Edition, perhaps you heard it on StoryCorps, we heard from two Japanese Americans and their memories as children being sent with their families to internment camps during the Second World War. Now, Sunday marks the 75th anniversary of the executive order that allowed that. The executive order by President Roosevelt that allowed Japanese Americans to be sent to these internment camps. It's also connected with a very famous U.S. Supreme Court decision that came down in 1944. Joining us to give us a little historical context and to make any comparisons that are needed to today's situation with the travel ban by President Trump, Mark Kendi is with us, director of the Constitutional Law Center at Drake University. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. You recently wrote an op-ed on this topic for the Des Moines Register. First of all, set the scene. Before we have you comment on any comparisons being made with Trump's travel ban, take us back. Set the scene. Tell us what prompted President Roosevelt to make this executive order in 1941.
I think the short answer is, you know, Pearl Harbor had taken place, and there was a concern about a column of potentially Japanese individuals invading on the West Coast, at least among some people, and created some fear both on the West Coast and in Washington, D.C. And, you know, a combination of these factors led the president to issue this kind of an order.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was what were the details of the order? What was actually carried out?
The order allowed military commanders to make decisions regarding the location of and establish areas where people could be placed on the West Coast in case of the perception that there was a real danger. And then what subsequently happened was the military commanders did believe there was such a danger and then moved over 100,000 Japanese into these internment camps pursuant to that order.
Mm-hmm. And as we heard in the memory I referenced today on Morning Edition, the military just showed, the U.S. military showed up at the door, came in and said, you've got to throw as many things as you can in perhaps a pillowcase. They destroyed a shortwave radio in the case. But this was carried out with military efficiency.
Yes, this was not done in a soft way. This was a real, you know, sort of showing up at the door type thing with very little time to move and, you know, a real sense that the people they were dealing with might be dangerous. I think that's what was going on.
So, Mark, this is interesting. At this time, of course, we're at war with Germany and Italy, the other Axis powers, but no executive order against German Americans or Italian Americans.
Right. The executive order would have allowed military commanders to take potential actions against such groups, but the commander, in other words, it was a general executive order, but the commanders decided the real danger and the only danger was the Japanese, and I think they did so for reasons that have to do with racial bias.
Mm-hmm. How did the public react to this executive order at the time?
I think there were many in the public who were sympathetic, but the ACLU, I know, and some other groups obviously raised some concerns, although there was actually an interesting split within the ACLU because there were some people who thought that this was awful and there were others who were quite loyal to FDR. But generally, you know, I think there was some public approval of this among people who thought that, well, you know, why should we not believe what the military has to say?
Mm-hmm. This military incarceration of over 100,000 Americans of Japanese descent found its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and a decision was handed down in 1944. A case, Korematsu versus the United States, this had to do with an individual named Fred Korematsu. Tell us, what is this story?
Yeah, he was just an ordinary, you know, individual, and you know, he'd worked in a variety of jobs. He'd experienced a whole bunch of discrimination and even lost some of the jobs because of discrimination towards him being Japanese. And then when this occurred, he was one of the people who resisted. And because he resisted going to the camp, he was arrested and charged.
So how did the Supreme Court decide, and what became of it after that?
Sure. Sure. So the case eventually worked its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and in a decision that we now think of as very bad, basically the court upheld, said it was okay to intern the Japanese, said it was okay to intern Mr. Korematsu, said that the dangers certainly were something that you had to defer to the president and the military in making the judgments on. And there were some powerful dissents written by justices, but the basic idea and basic premise was that at that time, we should trust the president and trust the military commanders in dealing with a wartime situation.
Mm-hmm. What was the follow-up in Fred Korematsu's situation? Compensation was at some point paid, wasn't it?
Yes, many years later, there was an apology issued, I believe, by Congress. Reparations of some type were paid to family members. Fred Korematsu led a very dignified life in which he spent much of his time going around the country talking about racism and talking about what happened to him. And I think he even received some sort of a medal from the president for his service to the country and sort of teaching us about the dangers of this kind of activity, mm-hmm. this kind of discrimination.
So, Mark, you wrote an op-ed piece on this topic for the Des Moines Register recently, the Fred Korematsu case, and connected it with the present. Tell us the points you wanted to make.
The basic connection is that Fred Korematsu continued to fight in this area and actually had a brief filed on behalf of Muslims who were being detained under the Bush administration. So you have this link between Fred Korematsu actually spending later time in his life helping the Muslims who are now being accused of being, people who are out to get us. And that's a link that, one would never expect because there's a long period of time between World War II and the present.
And then the similarities with the Trump travel ban?
The similarities are basically racial designation of people who are dangerous solely based on their status, whether it be Muslim in this case or Japanese in that case. And then you also have a connection with Fred Korematsu actually helping some of the Muslims who were accused under the Bush administration of having done something wrong.
Mm. So we don't know, or do we, whether Trump's travel ban will reach the Supreme Court. If it does, though, will this case be a precedent?
I believe it will be a precedent, but I think it's a slightly stronger case for the government in this situation. I mean, Korematsu right now has never been, the case itself has never been formally overturned, although his conviction has been vacated. But the case is still out there, and it's about presidential power. And so to the extent that when we get to an issue about can the government decide that people from these countries who are mostly Muslim can't come here, you bet the government's going to rely on a presidential power argument. They may not rely mainly on Korematsu because that decision itself is not looked on with great regard, but they will certainly rely on the arguments made in Korematsu about presidential and military intelligence and power.
Mm-hmm. Mark Kendi, before we go, any predictions on how this will turn out if it goes to the Supreme Court?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I think part of the problem is a technical legal issue, which is who has standing to bring this lawsuit. Certainly the people who are in these foreign countries, they actually don't really easily have the ability to initiate litigation. They have no sort of right to come to the United States. But there are people who have visas. There are people who have, permanent resident status, although some of them have been exempted. There may be a way to justify a lawsuit going forward. But I think, again, the concern about second-guessing the president is a tough one for the court, and although I'd like to see the court strike down this executive order, that might not happen. And I think the other thing to mention is that the government and President Trump has said he's going to issue a revised order, which if he issues a revised order, then that changes things, and then we'd have a whole different set of legal questions depending on what the new order says.
Mm-hmm. Mark Kendi, thank you very much for your insights, Director of the Constitutional Law Center at Drake University. We appreciate it, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me.